702.
The Africa Report.
Good morning, Lee Kasumba. We're taking a look at some interesting things that came out of the continent this week.
Yes, good morning, Yusiwe. I think the first thing that I did want to touch on, because COP25 is happening at the moment in Brazil, and that's obviously the United Nations' climate change summit that happens annually. So, climate change is affecting one of Africa's most important tourist destinations. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm talking about Victoria Falls.
Yeah.
So what's been happening is that people say that obviously when it comes to Victoria Falls, it is seasonal depending on the weather, you know, how fast it is that the water gushes out and so forth. But locals are saying that what they're seeing now is the worst that they've ever seen. It's literally gone from being gushing water to trickles.
Sure.
Which is really heartbreaking when you think about it. And, you know, what they say is that it's really affecting tourists and everything, because obviously with the technology that we have nowadays, people are able to go into Google Maps and literally they can see that the falls are not the former glory of what they really were before. Of course, it's affecting the macro economy within Zambia and Zimbabwe as a whole, because this is tourism is one of the biggest drivers, not just in those territories, but around the continent. I feel like it's something that brings people to the continent, you know, but also from the micro level. So there are always fringe economies that are built around these different kind of tourist destinations and attractions and so forth. And so they're the ones who feel like it's hitting them the most
where
that is concerned. Yeah, they're taking a huge hit. But something that's also quite, interesting to hear is that, you know, in terms of power supply, it's hitting them pretty hard, because the Zambezi River has the Kibera Dam that's attached to it, and that's upstream from Victoria Falls. And that's a hydropower plant. And there are now power shortages because of the drop of the water levels. So it is something that really needs to be paid attention to. And as we know, because climate change is something that nobody can ignore anymore. And science, we've been hearing reports quite often about how when it comes to carbon emissions and rising temperatures, Africa is one of the least, as a continent, we're the least, the people who contribute the least to it, but we're the most vulnerable where that is concerned. So it is quite alarming where that's concerned.
Yeah.
And just this week, there was a panel conversation that happened at COP25 that was facilitated by an environmental journalist from Cameroon called Eugene Ngofora. And on the panel, he had like five different leaders from around the continent. And some of the things that were key touch points were including the fact that global leaders needed to honor some of the adaptations of COP24.
Yeah.
And as we know, whenever there are these talk shops, should I say that happen, people tend to talk and talk and talk.
We know all about that.
Done.
Yeah.
We know all about that. So, these sort of things seem to happen. So they were talking about the urgency of just being able to adapt some of these decisions that had been made. And then also considering not only preventative measures where climate change is concerned, but also what happens after countries have been ravaged. So we know what's happened in Mozambique, specifically Beira as a whole has been really damaged. Yeah. And, they say that there should be more global attention to rebuilding countries and territories and cities and so forth within the continent that have been damaged so badly by climate change, because that is not a problem of the government in those countries, and it's not a problem of the people and of the continent as a whole. It's a problem of what it is that the world is doing and how Africa is being affected directly. So I thought that was quite a powerful point to bring forth.
Absolutely.
It wasn't a case of asking for aid. It was, look, Africa is not responsible for what is going on with climate change. Science has shown that we're not the ones to blame.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But what's also pertinent is just the idea that, once again, just looking at the US and the fact that they've they intend to withdraw from the Paris Agreement, and they keep making climate change denialist statements and views. It doesn't bode well for other countries who now had the so-called leader of the free world leading the charge, as it were, in terms of climate talks and climate best practice. And now when they abscond their responsibility all of a sudden, those that want to duck out of their responsibilities kind of have no big brother waiting there looking at them saying, what are you up to? So this is when we see how strong the consciences of governments and leaders actually are.
Exactly. And it also should be something that although reports show that they aren't really climate denialists, mm-hmm. so to speak, within the continent, like what we're seeing in some of the bigger nations around the world, yeah. specifically America, there still needs to be more of a concerted effort from people within the African Union and so forth, where there is an effort, where there's a focus towards it. There was just a panel conversation that happened with Kuma Damlo, who was a BBC journalist who died, and he was one of Africa's greatest journalists, and every year they have a summit around him when they give an award, and literally it was so incredible to hear young people from around the continent really panicking, because whenever we think about climate change within the continent, we see it from a global perspective and we never
localize it.
We never localize the problem, and young people are, saying that they're worried within the continent. They can see the effects. Within East Africa, it's like rain that should not be happening at times that it is. So there's extreme rain and then extreme drought, for example. And they say, what kind of world are they going to bring their children in? Mm. What is it that we can do? And as much as, there's an emphasis on unemployment and so forth, all of this is directly tied to climate change, so there needs to be more of an effort. I feel even within South Africa, where we are like, look, this is something that we need to deal with head on.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to our second story now. Rwanda continues to spend millions on Euro football teams in order to boost their tourism sector. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I think many people remember last year when Arsenal players started wearing the Visit Rwanda tags on their sleeves. It was quite a big story. And it was reported that they paid around $39 million US dollars, the Rwanda Tourism Board, right?
Yeah.
This year, the latest beneficiary is the French team, Paris Saint-Germain. And the deal this time around includes the women's team, as well as stadium branding, and it's a 3-year deal that's reported to be valued between $9 million US dollars and $11 million US dollars. Now, they got a lot of criticism last year when it came to them, supporting the Arsenal team and so forth. But the tourism board says that they've had like 100%, they've gained 100% back, so return of investment.
Okay.
And they've also had, which is pretty good. And they said specifically just from the United Kingdom, just from the time that they had, they sponsored the Arsenal team, they had an increase of 5% tourists from the UK alone, which is pretty good, And part of the reason why people were a bit upset or surprised with regards to the PSG, which is the Paris Saint-Germain team, is that that's actually one of the wealthiest teams in the world, just to set the stats. So firstly, in 2011, they were bought out by Qatar, which is one of the wealthiest oil-rich states in the world. Mm. And then also they've been spending hundreds and millions of US dollars on player transfers. As you know, Neymar was one of the direct beneficiaries.
Yeah. So what was the logic that PSG should have just done this advertising for free?
Yeah, exactly.
How dare they take this poor African nation's money?
Specifically, that was what people were saying, But, what I do like about Rwanda and their strategy as a whole is that they're really bold, It's really important to remember that because Rwanda is landlocked, what's quite interesting is that they're obviously smaller than most other African countries, but they also are not as resource rich as many African countries, They rely a lot on their dark tourism, so people going there to find out about what happened within the genocide, the memorial. Obviously, the guerrillas are like a huge, people around the world visit. But then also they're building an innovation hub, which is making themselves kind of like the center when it comes to innovation in Africa, and also with regards to them being a conferencing center. So they really are innovative in the way that they're getting global attention and the way that they're getting visitors and so forth. And just to add some interesting stats, that what they're trying to do is that by 2024, they want to boost their local tourism industry to be valued at $800 million US dollars per year, which would be like almost double the amount because in 2017 it was worth $438 million US dollars. And I think that Rwanda can do it. It seems as though when they set their mind on something, they get it done.
A bold, bold nation indeed. Absolutely, Lee. That's all we have time for. So we'll leave it right there for this morning. But of course, we know that Lee Kasumba is the host of the Africa State of Mind podcast. So for more interesting interviews and content from her, head on over to lifepodcast.fm. Lee, we'll talk again next week. Thank you.
Thank you.